Hi there, welcome to this week's edition of The Front Page. Loads as ever to discuss. We'll be focusing on the Grand National entries, heavy Irish numerical domination, as we had expected in that race. So much so that all the British entries actually got into the race, there still wouldn't be enough for a maximum field. But we could have seen two proper British Championship challenges for the Cheltenham Festival at Newbury on Saturday in the shape of Shishkin and also Edward Stone. And if you're looking to punt on the Cheltenham Festival, an overzealous bookmaker restrictions could limit your ambitions. We'll be considering those later in today's programme. And doing the consideration will be my Racing Post colleagues, Maddie Playl and Pete Scargill. Hello to you both.
Morning. Hello, Lee. Hello.
Is life treating you kindly? Who wants to go first? Maddie.
I'll go first. Yeah. I'll touch on this in a minute, but I got to enjoy the racing because I was off. I had a weekend off, which is quite a rarity these days. Yeah. So enjoyed it from the comfort of my own sofa.
Lovely. Were you on your sofa?
No, I was doing DIY, Lee, which is terrible on all sorts of levels because A, I am rubbish at DIY, and B, DIY is rubbish.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I would agree. Yeah, we had the family around, you say, the in-laws and my other half's sister, her husband and her kids. And while I did the cooking, we've got something that we call the summer house in the back garden. It's actually a fancy shed. But the sister-in-law was quite adamant that the wooden flooring, the sort of the planks weren't good enough, so they've stapled lino to the floor. And they've done a very nice job.
Whilst they were there?
Yeah, so after lunch, so I did brisket and then creme brulee. And then after that, yeah, thank you. After that, they did some lino stapling, and it does
look
very nice.
Oh, very good.
Anyway, we shouldn't do too much lino talk in this week's edition. We'll go straight to Maddie Playl, who wants to discuss a cracking weekend of racing.
Yes, Builders Super Saturday, and we had some performances that really delivered on that. Shishkin, first off, winning the Denman Chase. An interesting victory for him. The big question beforehand, of course, was would he start and would he finish? Well, he started, unlike he did at Ascot earlier this season. And unlike at Kempton last time, where there was lots of late drama, he did indeed finish, and finish strongly he did. To me, that's the cornerstone of the horse he is these days. It might seem a silly comparison to make, but he almost reminds me of Altior at the late stages of his career, how it wouldn't look great for three quarters of the race, but the last portion of the race, he would really dig in and it would be stamina and toughness that would see him win the day. And that was a very, very good performance from him. I do think there needs to be some improvement in the jumping department, though, for him to challenge Galopin Deschamps and co in the Gold Cup at Cheltenham. He also seemed to hang left a little bit over a couple of his fences, which I thought was a bit of a concern. And we saw it in the Ryanair last year behind Envoi Hélène. I think you can't really afford to be making these mistakes or tiny little niggles out in the country in a Gold Cup, because you will just get out of a rhythm. And although we know he's going to be strong at the tail end of a race, I do think in a higher calibre race, obviously Hitman was second, it was a good return to form for him, but he's going to be facing horses of higher calibre than that, you'd hope, at Cheltenham. I think he needs to iron those out and just become a little bit more professional and economical rather than clattering the odd one and kind of racing behind the bridle. I think that could make him vulnerable when it comes to tactics in a Gold Cup potentially. But a really good performance from him. A really, really good performance from Edward Stone. At the start of the season in our big jump-off supplement, I suggested that with Energamine out, Edward Stone could represent the value in the Champion Chase. I think he was around 16-1. And before racing on Saturday, he was around 16-1 again. I think he's the most likely horse to finish third in a Champion Chase. And therefore, he's not the worst each-way bet in the world. If you look at Racing Post ratings, he bounced back to his best on Saturday, producing an effort of 170. And John Bond at Cheltenham in the Clarence House was 165. Now, we know John Bond was a lot below his best on that occasion, but he's also been second a couple of times at the Cheltenham Festival, hasn't quite been able to produce his best. So I think you wouldn't need an awful lot to go in his way to be finishing in the top two in a Champion Chase for Edward Stone, if he could reproduce or even build on Saturday's effort. Really like him as a horse, and he just seemed to have his mojo back, didn't he? Mm. Front running seemed to change him. He was keen, he was enthusiastic, and he never looked like being beaten. It was almost a bit like a piece of work. Something you've touched upon, Lee, in your colour was the attendances, and indeed the Betfair Hurdle. Attendances down by almost half or over half compared to 20 years ago in 2004, when we had some really classy horses running in the Betfair Hurdle, you know, Rooster Boosters and horses like that. A rating of 139 top weight in this year's Betfair Hurdle. Great race, very competitive, throwing up a very good horse who could be, in a normal year, champion hurdle calibre perhaps, but it's just a warning sign, I think, for this trend that we know, and we'll talk a little bit more about later on in the show, about a lack of depth and a lack of horses right at the top end of British racing.
Yeah, great summary. Of those points, which would you like to pick up on first? Shishkin, Edward Stone, the lack of two-mile hurdling talent in Britain, or the lack of people at Newbury on Saturday?
I'm going to take a different option, Lee, and I'm going to ask you about it, because there.
I was.
You were
I was, right?
Providing people with your wisdom and views on things.
Even went down to start the three-mile chase.
So you'd be better placed than me, who made the opportunity to watch it between doing coats of paint on my ceiling. Now, obviously, I can proffer a view.
Yes.
But, you know, you were there. What was it? I mean, things like you look on social media in terms of the food offering was a bit...
Yes,
you know, lame.
Posted a picture of an appalling looking.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It made me feel good about what I produce on a daily basis. And you say that the crowds were obviously lower.
Yeah.
And there was an email we had in this morning to the Racing Post from someone who was there. He said, there's absolutely no point coming because we don't get any of the stuff you get on ITV. We kind of get forgotten about, which I know has been covered before in terms of bringing the offer better, you know, presumably as part of the Premier Racing idea. So... You tell me, Lee.
Yeah.
How it was.
Well, I thought it felt quiet on Saturday. The Newbury team there did report that the crowd was up on last year, but it had only been about 4,500 last year, and it just felt to me that a day like that, build a super Saturday. You know, we've got Britain's most valuable handicap hurdle to trials for championship races at the Cheltenham Festival. Bringing in two proper British jump stars in Shishkin and Edward Stone. For a day like that to only pull in 5,000 people, regardless of any potential explanatory factors, just seemed to me really disappointing. And it fits a trend of a number of good big jumps days this season at the weekend have been down on previous. Some have been up, but many have been down.
Newbury have struggled a bit as well.
Newbury have really struggled. I mean, the Coral Gold Cup, the Hennessy of old, numbers for that have fallen off a cliff in recent years. They've gone from something like 16,000 to 10,000 in no time at all. So I think there is an issue at Newbury. So I think that is concerning. I don't quite understand why, but I think some really good arguments have been made. I saw people reference the lack of value on Saturday compared to the previous weekend's Dublin Racing Festival, which did seem to be great value for money and has had tremendous customer feedback. And perhaps it is an element of if people feel that all the best horses are trained in Ireland, what's the point in coming to watch a big meeting in Britain. I hope that's not a factor, because we did have some good racing on Saturday. As I said, I did go down to start of the three-mile chase, thinking there might be a bit of drama for a colour writer to report on.
You're always on the scene, Leanne. You're always thinking laterally.
Yeah,
I like
got my shoes wet, increased my daily step count, but nothing happened. He was as good as gold.
There is still the risk it might happen at Cheltenham, though.
It could, yeah. And I thought if I made that point...
The record of horses refusing and then never refusing again can't be that high.
No, once it's in his head, and I was speaking to someone on Saturday who made the point that if he's not really wanting to do it all the time, then that could resurface. But I think that the good thing about him is that, bizarrely, for a horse who's as established as he is... I think there's still some potential upside in him in the sense that he's never raced over 3, 2.5 before. And the way he finishes his races makes me think that if he does happen to be in Galopin de Chance slipstream turning for home, you never know. He could just put the old turbocharge in and
I don't know. It feels a little bit like we're sort of saying, and look, Shishkin's a very talented horse and he's done great and it'd be wonderful to own him and all that sort of stuff you have to say. But are we sort of... trying to build him into something because we've got so little.
Well,
I mean,
yes,
you'd almost be true. You know, we're making this argument for Shishkin, but you've got a better candidate in Lompressé.
In terms
of that. So definitely. We're going, we can all see Shishkin doing it, which, you know, when he wins, me and Chris Cooker look really stupid, won't we, about it. But it almost feels like we're trying to you know, burnish his reputation a little bit more.
You might be right. And maybe we're doing the same with Edward Sane, but I did think he was a joyful sight to see on Saturday, because he looked like he was really enjoying it. Went off from the front. Interesting point made by Alan King afterwards, that he'd changed the way he's training the horses. He was talking about how he'd been on work mornings, they'd been going up the big hill there twice. He's now gone back to his old method of three times, and they seem to be running better and finishing better. Plus the change of tactics on Saturday, which Tom Cannon said he'd been looking to do for quite a while, and that really worked.
Did he talk about how that training flat horses influenced it at all? Because obviously you tend to be slightly less hard on flat horses comparatively. I wonder whether, because he trains so many more flat horses now
and doing really
so
well
much
with
success,
them,
whether sort of translated across to the jumps.
I mean,
this is complete, you know, conjecture. I just wonder whether, and he's gone, actually, no, I need to train.
I find it interesting you can have a trainer, you know, hugely established trainer, who just proves in those down moments you do second guess yourself and you're still thinking, oh, should I change things? You know, you speak to any decorated trainer and they'll say, even through the down moments, you have to trust yourself and not change anything. And it's interesting that he has thought, no, we will change something, and that's worked.
Yeah. Well, we all live and learn, don't we?
We do. We do. And just, we're obviously talking about Britain's championship race prospects.
Yes.
And how, with Edward Stone and Shishkin, we're going to serve up to the Irish.
Yes.
But then, like, you look in Ireland and Brighter Days Ahead absolutely bolted up in the listed race, the Apples Jade listed race. And now if you're involved with Dysart Enos or somebody in the Mayor's Novices Hurdle, you're thinking, oh, here comes another one. Is another, you know,
she
another,
was
another,
impressive, wasn't she?
You know really what I mean? Was. And Gordon Elliott's gone, this is a proper horse.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just unrelenting, the horse that are challenging for races from Ireland.
But on a slight, just flipping it around on a slightly more positive note.
That I don't do positively. Come on, face to your audience,
just
come on.
Positive for Britain.
Right, okay.
There's a regular narrative that prize money in Ireland is invariably always better than British prize money. Two Grade Twos at Navan on Sunday, both €36,500, which equates to around £32,000. That must be just about as low as a Grade Two has been run at for some time. Even the old Demon and Game Spirit Chases were some of the lowest valued Grade Twos in Britain at 50,000. They're now 85,000. The Kingmaker, had it been run on Saturday, would have been run for 75,000. Mm. So both, all those three races, double the value of the Grade Twos at Navan on Sunday. So a bit like Trumpian politics, you can keep saying something and come to believe it's true. It's not always the case, certainly not always the case, that prize money in Ireland is better than prize money in Britain.
And Willie Mullins attracted to Exeter on Sunday with Fun, Fun, Fun. So it can't be that bad.
And there's no doubt that on Sunday, Willie Mullins will have had fun, fun, fun watching that Exeter performance. You too can have fun, fun, fun by using the Sparkling Racing Post app, on which there is an extensive catalogue of race replays. Welcome back to part two of The Front Page. My turn now to do a bit of talking, and I'm going to talk to you about what I penned in my column in the Racing Post in today's edition, Monday's edition. It was sort of linked back to my previous week visiting Rishi Sunak's Richmond, North Yorkshire constituency. The thrust of that job was to find local reaction to affordability checks. But what I did find when I was there was a number of people, without being prompted, also raised the subject of bookmaker restrictions on punters. Ed Bethel, the increasingly successful trainer, spoke about having been limited to barely a tenner when he's tried to have a bet in the past. Racegoers and punters reference it. And so did James Sanderson, the clerk of the course, and the chief exec at Catterick Racecourse, who spoke about bookmakers now not being able to afford winning punters. So with all that in mind, I put in a call to William Woodhams, chief executive of Fitzdares Bookmakers, who's often very candid on industry matters, and he was very candid on this one. He spoke about himself having been restricted when he tried to back his own horse in a race recently. The horse didn't win, but he was still restricted after the bet because he beat SP. And William also made the point that he wonders whether as a result of affordability checks, bookmakers are using that as a way of limiting some particularly talented punters. It's a subject I've written plenty about in the past. I think it's massively important. And one particular, again, hook and thrust of it now is that racing and the Bookmakers Trade Association, the Betting and Gaming Council, are quite rightly saying that affordability checks will be pushing people away from racing and towards the black market. Well, logic dictates that overzealous bookmaker restrictions will be doing the same thing. All bookmakers will restrict punters from time to time. They will need to do that to manage their liabilities. But it seems increasingly the case that in these algorithm-driven times, bookmakers are all too hungry and all too keen to restrict anybody who wins too much or who perhaps doesn't lose enough or just proves too good at beating SPs and odds compilers. And it is surely a very bad thing indeed for horse racing. I think, Pete, it's an open and shut case. Do you agree?
Well, it's interesting the use of the words very bad for horse racing.
Yes.
Because
in some ways it's not.
Yes. Well, this is it. Not that I'm defending the position.
No.
But obviously, horse racing and betting are inextricably linked.
Yeah.
Horse racing gets money from bookies through the levy.
Yeah.
And that comes from
profits.
Gross profits, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So the more money the bookmakers make, the more money which racing makes, theoretically. So yeah, you want more people to lose.
And it's the optics are terrible, but that is true. And again, that's the point that I'm making the piece that while there was momentum behind the idea of moving the levy from profits to turnover, one of the arguments made, including Joe Saunders-Smith, when I interviewed him over a year ago, the BHA chair, made the point that we don't want to see the support benefiting when the top horses lose. And as you said, that also equates to when punters lose. Mm. That's looking not likely to be the case now because of the economics of horse racing at the minute. And of course, the media rights are based on turnover as well as it is at the moment. But yeah, it is a bad look, isn't it, Maddie?
Yeah, I'm going to be really interested just to, we talk about these issues a lot, affordability and black market, etc. I'm going to be interested to see how the next couple of months go with the big Cheltenham Festival, which last year we were saying that's going to be a huge issue because it's going to trigger a lot of these algorithms when people log into their accounts for the first time and try and place big bets and they're going to be set back. And races like the Grand National as well, because maybe to put a slightly different spin on it, we've spoken before on this show about the sort of the death of the betting ring. Do these issues with affordability, with restrictions, mean that we're actually going to have a more vibrant betting ring now? Because people are going to perhaps not get better odds and offers, etc., but they know they're not going to get knocked back when they bet in person. I think that's quite an interesting thing to explore, because it's largely been argued over the last couple of years that all the colour and the sort of energy from that betting ring on the big day has sort of dissipated a lot. So I wonder if that could make a difference. And I'd be interested to see the statistics after those big festivals, just how they reflect on the direction that we're going.
There's certainly logic, isn't there, Pete, to say that the betting ring could increasingly be the place to be. One of the guys I spoke to on my Yorkshire trip, Keith Johnson, big racecourse bookmaker, he spoke about the current difficulties, but making the point that affordability doesn't really extend directly anyway to the racecourse betting ring.
That's true, but then, as we discussed previously, nobody goes racingly.
No.
I told you, I'm not the positive guy.
No, you're
that's
not.
That's why I'm so
they
far away.
They do in Cheltenham and Aintree, though, Pete.
That's true, and obviously they are different examples. They are different cases, and you know, there'll be someone from ITV Racing in the betting room, and they'll be talking about people putting on huge bets and all that kind of stuff, which is great. And that is what we, you know, what we had with the old Tic Tac Man and all that kind of stuff from the past. But I don't know whether on a daily basis it's going to make as much of a difference. But yeah, I mean, there's undoubtedly a situation where if you're in a position where you sort of are mandated, but not sort of mandated because of how things are with the Gambling Commission, to ask people about, you know, can they afford to spend this? Can you show me your bank details and all this sort of stuff? You know, if you were a business, you'd be foolish not to use it as an opportunity to perhaps do some pruning, wouldn't you? However, you know, ungenuine, that, no, not ungenuine, you know, unfair that might be.
Which is what William Williams is suggesting.
Yeah, and I mean, there's enough people. I mean, I'm a coward of a punter, right?
Yes.
So I'm not a bad punter, but I'm a coward. So I'm very small stakes and not a very regular punter. So it's not something that's happened to me. But you know, we spoke to colleagues in the office this morning who've had all sorts of account restrictions.
Yep.
So it definitely happens, and it's definitely probably, and it must be enraging to have that happen.
Mm.
And then on top of it, you've got all this affordability stuff coming on. And you know, you see screenshots on social media all the time of just the things you have to give to have a bet. It's just remarkable.
Yeah.
And it's I enjoyed your piece up in Yorkshire. Sweet, good Yorkshire folk.
Yes.
Giving good Yorkshire views on things. So I mean, how was it? Do you think Rishi got the message?
Well, you'd hope that his people read this sort of thing, because certainly there's a momentum behind the campaign, if you like, against the checks. And I think what became apparent to me as well was speaking to a number of racing participants. It was how difficult they're finding things right now. Jed and Andrea Keefe, Jed Train, Andrea's wife, and Andrea, who does loads of different racing jobs across the industry. They're both incredibly well respected. And they're not unsuccessful either. Mm. They'd had two winners out the last three runners when I went up there. But Jed was saying, we are on a precipice. Mm. You know, we are close to folding.
I mean, it's every week we're talking about trainers who are packing it in, aren't we? I mean, Henry Spiller was the
David
latest
Griffiths.
One.
David Griffiths,
yeah.
Ed Bethel was talking about how, you know, Ed, as I said before, big success story right now. But he was highlighting that he'd had his first Group 1 winner last September with Regional. He thought that might be the trigger for the phone starting to ring a lot more, and it hasn't been ringing a lot more. So I think times are tough. And they all made the point that we need government to make things easier for us, not to make things harder for us. And that's what we've seen in recent days. People like David Redbers, Angus Gold, the National Trainers Federation, all making that same point, almost a plea to government. And interesting, Conor McGinn, the independent former Labour MP.
Yeah,
I thought his contribution at an event at Chester last week was very incisive, where he spoke about an illiteracy among parliamentarians, generally speaking, when it comes to racing and betting, and describing those who would like to be pushing racing's case and betting's case in the Westminster Hall debate as the last of the Mohicans, which was, again, it was a wake-up call for us all going into Feb 26.
This is it, and you know, building on your point about how, you know, we want government to make things easier rather than more difficult for these people.
Yeah.
I mean, I was at the February sale week before last, chatting away with a trainer who's involved in the NTF, and they were, you know, they were ashen faced talking about how many of their colleagues they felt were really right on the edge. Like, this wasn't hyperbole. This was genuinely, like, I'm genuinely worried for some of them.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of their businesses, and you find with a lot of trainers that they go beyond the logical point.
Yeah.
I think David Griffiths was sort of talking about it.
Probably maybe kind of said, 1 year too many.
Yeah. And you know, but he managed to get out. But a lot of them sort of get stuck in, don't they? They get stuck into, I owe money.
Yeah.
Other people sort of extend them credit because they think they'll get the money back, and it keeps going. And, you know, you talk about the O'Keefes. I mean, I spoke to another trainer this week who was saying how he's got a huge outstanding debt from quite a reputable owner.
Right.
And this is just all feeding into the situation. Now, there's a lot of pressures on training businesses, on lots of businesses, but
absolutely,
particularly, and this is only heaping on with what's going on. And you know, again, we've got this big opportunity, 26th February, to make the point. And you want as many people, MPs, to be there, because it's important that they do understand it, that this level of illiteracy, this, we don't really understand. We'll get up and talk about it. Gambling's not very good. Rishi Sunak, I'm not a betting man. All this sort of stuff. And it's casting more people into a bad position. And that's not even without the restrictions element of it.
Yeah.
To go back to the basic, you know, guy can't have a bet.
To act as a segue into our next talking point as well, a lot of these trainers being put under pressure and forced to quit the ranks, is that going to lend itself to even more dominance in fewer areas and these superpowers getting even stronger as well?
Yeah, I mean, yes, because in the end, everyone would rather have their horses trained by, you know, Willie Mullins, Gordon Elliott,
And where does that leave the sport, you know, in 10 years, 20 years down the line?
Well, it should be a more streamlined sport, I suspect. Streamlined sounds like business talk, doesn't it? You know, there'll be fewer people, won't there? Because you can't exist on a dozen horses. I mean, some trainers would have 30 horses and they'd be struggling to make it pay.
Yeah.
But it can only go that way, and, you know, because of how pre-training got yards work and all this sort of stuff, you can have 150 horses in training and 100 horses in pre-training yards to come in. It's the whole ecosystem changed in that respect.
Yeah.
And you could argue there are too many race courses and there are too many trainers to some extent, if you wanted to go down that line. I don't know what you think about it, but
I think it's a concern, isn't it? I mean, we've spoken before about Willie Mullins and the fact that, you know, he has all these superstar horses, and to be fair to him, he runs them against each other.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't be putting our pressure on racing's individuals to create a competitive sport. You know, we should have a sport that stands up against and fits the horse population and caters to the people in it and works effectively.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Stuart Andrew, the gambling and sport minister, said last week that he is listening to what people say. He described the Westminster Hall debate as a good listening exercise. Well, of course, the hope is that at some point the government and the Gambling Commission will go beyond listening and actually taking action in favour of horse racing and of punters. And let's hope as well that racing as a sport starts to take the issue of restrictions more seriously as well. You might even get restricted if you're trying to have a bet on the Grand National. And if you are trying to have a bet on the Grand National, you might find there aren't that many British horses to back come the big day in mid-April. Pete Scargill.
Yes. Yes, there was going to be fewer horses anyway.
Yes.
Because we've only got 34 horses to go to post this year. Earlier as well. Don't be tuning in at 4:15. 4 o'clock.
Yep.
Animal Rising are going. They need to be there at 4 o'clock this year. Not
Let's
at 5:15.
Hope they're not.
No.
Yes.
So yeah, Grand National entries out last week, and as per normal, dominated by Irish horses.
Yeah.
Dominated by Messrs. Mullin and Elliott. And it makes grim reading if you are a fan of British staying handicappers, really, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But in the end, is it a surprise? Because the Grand National is like a better race now, isn't it? That's the whole point of it. The fences have changed, so better horses are drawn to it. So surely it's only logical that the trainers with the best horses are going to have more runners.
Yeah.
Theoretically, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the only other point to make is that our colleague Chris Cook, Mr. Grand National himself,
loves it, doesn't he? Loves it. We all love it.
I tell you what, I'm going to try and channel my inner Chris Cook today.
Yes.
By ripping off all of his work. He's done the front runner today. Yeah. The Racing Post members email that comes out every morning through the week, and he's had a go at framing the Grand National weights. This is how dedicated he is to doing it. And according to Chris's jottings, he reckons there'd be only 6 British trained.
Yeah.
Runners in the field. Gordon Elliott would have 10, for what it's, you know, by comparison. Although, and the viewers or listeners will be subjected to tips from us later on, I understand.
Apparently.
There are three of the top 10 in the betting are British.
Yeah.
Corrack Rambler, who's favourite, Nassalam, and another horse I've forgotten. I'm going to have a look. It is. Come on. Oh, Monbeg Genius, who we'll come on to again later on.
Yeah, I know you want to talk about Monbeg Genius.
So, you know, there's fewer of them, but they're not without a sporting chance still.
Yeah.
So there we are. That's my summary of the Grand National. And sort of suitably cheery for me.
But, there was nothing in there that we didn't expect, was there, Maddie? We knew that it would be heavy on Ireland, quiet on Britain, but it was still stark to see the numbers, even though they were roughly the same percentage, 65-67% of previous years. And Gordon Elliott with a record personal entry up 22 to 26.
Yeah, and it just makes you realise that if there was a cap on how many horses a certain trainer could run in a race, similar, you know, solutions, if you like, have been mooted and even, you know, nearly introduced, but they haven't been. Well, there wouldn't be enough good horses to fill the race, would there? Yeah. If Gordon Elliott could only run 2 or 3, then that's going to lessen the quality of the race significantly. So you can't really have a go at him. I mean, he's in theory injecting class into the race, and we know that Ireland have the best horses, so therefore you can't really expect any different.
Yeah, and again, you can't criticise, can you, Gordon Elliott or Willie Mullins or anyone for being good at what they do, and he's perfectly entitled to enter as many horses in the Grand National as he wants. One thing I did think was worth raising was you made that point about the discussed trainer limit in British handicaps and particularly in the Grand National.
That was swiftly vetoed.
Yeah, so the BHA, in effect, are stakeholders. What would you think about this as a potential idea? And they referenced the Troy Town in which
they did. Gordon they explicitly, was, didn't they?
They did explicitly reference the Troy Town, which Gordon was, it like 14 or 20?
Yeah.
The BHA then decided recently not to do anything, but their quote when they announced that made clear that it was sort of a, for now, we're not going to do anything, but we will keep this under the microscope. And I suspect that what happens in relation to this year's Grand National will be crucial in how that policy is framed in the future, because I think if they feel that one particular operation is very heavily represented relative to everybody else, that they might feel that they almost have to do something. Because for a while, there's, again, no criticism of any one individual for having a lot of runners in the race, because they're just being good at what they do.
It shouldn't be good for the race, can it?
It can't be good for the Grand National.
But why? Playing devil's advocate, why can't it be good for the race? Because in the end, if I'm going in with my free £1 betting thing I get on my red top newspaper on Grand National Day, do I care that Gordon Elliott trains all the horses? I want my horse to win. Is it only us sort of who are involved in it all of the time and, you know, get worked up about these things?
Maybe we care more. I think maybe in some ways it's almost a bigger problem. I've heard this discussed in the last week or so, this argument raised, can't remember who raised it, but it's almost a bigger issue if it's one owner, in the sense that the optics of people watching 34 horses galloping towards the first fence, and if 8, 9, 10 of those are wearing the same silks, that immediately gives someone a perception that, is this a real competition?
But imagine 34 JP McManus horses. Imagine the hat combinations.
Yes.
That'd be glorious, wouldn't
it? Richard Hoyles would love that, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I think that'd be... I mean, you could run it as a... Maybe they could do like a virtual... You know, they do the virtual Grand National.
Well, they used to. I think it was axed.
Oh.
Yes.
This is terrible news. I thought you could have the virtual JP McManus Grand National with all the different hats.
Well, you think about that. You
I might
maybe,
pitch
maybe
it.
Suggest that to ITV. What we, at the minute, we could still see is one horse carrying the colours of the owners of Monbeg Genius.
Yes.
Because?
Yes, Doug Barrowman and Baroness Moan, Michelle Moan. So, as everyone will be aware, I'm sure, there is a National Crime Agency investigation into Doug Barrowman and Michelle Moan at the moment, in around PPE, MedPro, and the acquiring by the government of PPE equipment, and they use the VIP fast lane, all of these sort of elements. So there was an asset seize recently by the NCA, and they've been trying to figure out whether that impacted Monbeg Genius, a bit like, you know, when we had John Dance at Aintree last year.
Yes.
And we didn't know whether the horses were involved in, and Brave Man's Game was going to run, and then he wasn't going to run, and then they had to sort all of that out around that. So the BHA confirmed on Friday that Monbeg Genius isn't part of the freezing order. So if John Joe and Neil and the owners want to go there, they can do. But it will be a bit of a blast from the past, won't it? At Aintree, because you've got Randox sponsoring the Grand National, which is obviously part of the test and trace system. Dido Harley, Baroness, now is the senior steward at the Jockey Club, and Monbeg Genius. So yes, anyone who wants to think back to the days of COVID and all of the stuff around that will have the opportunity to do so. It's not the horse's fault, obviously, but you're going to feel a bit sort of squeamish, aren't you? Particularly if it's coming up cruising, you know, John Joe O'Neill Jr.'s cruising up two out. You know, is this one of them we think, well, please don't win. Run a gallant second. Are we allowed to do that in racing, or do we just have to support it because it's a horse?
I almost thought for a second we were in an episode of Have I Got News For You. That strong satirical commentary was
Well, I don't, do you know what I mean? I do, and I mean, I don't imagine, just to interrupt, obviously there's, you know, no false proportion to the BHA or anything like that. They've investigated it. The NCAA say it's fine, and you know, the BHA just can't come in swinging all the time and say, yes, we can't, you can't, it doesn't work like that. So a lot of people will no doubt criticise the BHA saying this horse should not be running. But I don't think they're in the position to do that because they've checked it out. Anyway, I did interrupt, but I felt I needed to add that.
And I think you're right in the sense I don't think victory for those owners will be perceived as a warm and cosy reason for the nation to rejoice. For right or wrong, I don't know.
Certainly, different if the top weight Hewitt wins, won't it?
Absolutely, yes. Go Irish domination. That, I reckon, is probably that in terms of stories to discuss. Before we wrap things up, though, we have a free bets offer for you. Here it is. Welcome back. We are about to wrap up the programme. Producer Dave is insisting that before we leave you, we give you some Grand National tips, having discussed the world's greatest horse race a few moments earlier. I'm going to be really boring and say that I think Korat Rambler could do it back to back. I've already backed him for the Gold Cup each way. I could see him charging up the hill. So he'd be my very boring selection. I think Noble Yates would run a big race as well, yes, on the previous Grand National winner. But I'm not employed as a tipster. Maddie Playle, you do
can
tipping.
Can be, yeah.
Yeah, one of the many hats that you wear. And you wear them very well too, not least a tipping one. And what therefore wins a Grand National?
Like you, I'm a big Korat Rambler fan, and I also put him up for the Gold Cup each way earlier on this season, and I love him, and I think he's a very likely winner. I wonder if the new style Grand National, we're going to see more repeat winners. That discussion came into play with Tiger Roll a bit, didn't it? But anyway, to give you another one that might be a little bit more interesting, if he gets in, by Chris Cook's reckoning, he will just about squeeze in, and that is Mr. Incredible.
Okay.
Who we haven't seen since the Grand National last year.
Yeah.
And he is saddle slipped and he unseated rider at the Canal Turn, but he was still in contention, going quite well. He advertised his stamina in the Classic Chase and the Kim Muir before that. Think he's a bit of a forgotten horse and he could be a surprise package for that man, Willie Mullins.
Okay. And we talked about Shishkin earlier on. Again, Mr. Incredible, not necessarily a straightforward.
No, not at all. But Aintree often lights up those individuals. And I just thought he was interesting on the list anyway.
Okay. And what about you, King of DIY?
Monbeg Genius for me. No. No, I'm going to have a Panda Boy.
Oh, ran the other day at Leopardstown.
Ran the other day. Very nice. If I was Martin Brazel, I'd sort of come away thinking, yeah, I like that run. Went through the race nicely, lost the position, stayed on well. So I wonder whether he might go for the Korat Rambler Ultima race that Fast or Slow was second in last year for Martin Brazel, and then go and win the Grand National.
Yeah. Do you know, little story of punting, though, I backed Fast or Slow for the Ultima last year, saw him touched off, and then he goes and beats the Gold Cup winner repeatedly. And one thing Martin Brazel said to me, after
back
that race,
Panda Boy for the Grand National.
No, I said to him, Martin, Fast or Slow could be a Grand National horse. He said to me, he could be better than that. And look what he's done since then.
There we are. See, getting the time of day, that guy.
What a nice anecdote to bring this edition to a close. Before we do, I need to reveal this week's winning story. Three strong stories, great weekend of racing with issues around crowd sizes and the quality of British hurdlers, Grand National entries, low on British entries, lots of Irish entries, particularly those trained by Gordon Elliott. But unusually, because in recent weeks I haven't made my.
I don't know why I bother turning up. No, you're unfair.
Just no. I don't like making my own story the winning story, but I do think restrictions are a big issue. Obviously tied in with affordability checks, and therefore this week, with apologies, I have the winning story, but Pete Scargill now has beautifully painted walls, do you not?
Well, ceilings, but yes.
Yes, ceilings. Seems really important. Thank you to Pete, thank you to Maddie Thank you to you for watching. We shall return next week. All being well, until then, bye-bye.